This podcast is brought to you by all the thirsty women in the world that slide in guys' DMs. Menace to society. It is Monday, August 5th for Patreon subscribers. It is also Tuesday, August 6th for the rest of yous. Welcome to the new studio. We got soundproofing in. We have, this sounds amazing. I'm really fired up about this new studio, really fired up how it sounds, how it looks, really excited for video content coming here in the next couple weeks. I'm going to do this show solo today because today's topics are very personal to me. I don't need or want anyone addressing the audacious situation Ohio State just recreated on Friday other than me. So this is a solo show and we're going to address everything that came out, everything that was said because they made it relevant. So that's on them. Just quick update for the show. We actually are almost at 400,000 downloads and listeners. This last 4 days have been insane. Prior to this dump by Ohio State, we doubled on Thursday. We doubled our most downloaded and listened to day on Thursday and Friday before they dumped all this nonsense. And we're really fired up about the growth. I'm really fired up about the attention and the momentum right now. Want to make sure we kind of let you know we are still open to discussing advertising and sponsorship partnerships. But to be clear, it has to be right. It has to be a great fit. I don't have any interest in selling out or partnering with a company that isn't in line with our vision. This will remain sponsor-free, ad-free, until we find the partners we think fit our vision, brand, and our audience. But if you are interested, please reach out to us at sponsorship@menacetosocietypodcast.com. Also, if you listen and haven't supported the show yet, we encourage you to at least check out our Patreon. We're providing additional content, some videos, subscriber-exclusive segments, which we will have one today. And it's as low as $5 a month is the lowest tier, and you get pretty much early access to the show, all the exclusive segments at that tier. And then moving forward with the all-in and VIP subscribers, you get access to a lot more. So just check it out if you could. It's patreon.com/menacetosocietypodcast. A lot of people have asked, what does that do for the show? And just kind of a little insight into what we've been doing. We've taken all of that Patreon subscribership, the finances involved, and we're really doubling down. We built this new studio. We really, because of the support, we decided to invest in this show more than we already were. This was going to be something that was going to be fun, entertaining, and now we're really doubling down. We're really bought in. We're really taking off with it, and your support is appreciated. We financed outside of just the cost of the show. We financed new equipment, this new studio, and we're going to continue to do that. We're going to keep pumping everything into this show because we're fired up about where it's going. Also, if you haven't yet, check out our website, menacetosocietypodcast.com. Patreon members, quick note, we dropped off the shipment of shirts this morning, so we apologize for the ridiculous delay, but we had an issue with Patreon memberships that we have since fixed and had to wait until after the first of the month to ship those shirts, so they're en route. Plans for the show, obviously we're going to keep this show going. It's going to be a national college football analysis show. And we're with obviously off-topic, current events, life content, that sort of thing. We're also launching a pro Ohio sports show in a couple weeks here. And also we're going to start a third show, which is going to be a Midwest college football show. It's going to be really diving in deep into the Big Ten, Notre Dame, non-Power 5 schools in the Midwest so that our listeners that are maybe in the Big 12 country or SEC country, you don't have to sit and listen to us talk about Ohio State and Notre Dame all day long. So that we're really fired up about that. I'm also still working out details for a live show, trying to figure out if and when we're going to do that, where we're going to do that. So we will let you know. And obviously Patreon, VIP, and all-in subscribers and all Patreon subscribers will be the first to know about that. So we'll let you know as that comes up. I'm also going to start this year off with a bang. I'm going to head down to Orlando later this month for the Florida-Miami game. But shout out to the Big Three Roll-Up for making that happen. So excited to start this year off, get this college football rolling. So let's get going in the show. All right, as we get started here, diving right into the show, I just want to let you know this is going to be very different than all the other shows. It's going to be a one-time thing. I'm doing this by myself just to address this situation once and for all. I'm going to give you my insider perspective and insight into it. We'll go through it. It's going to be a shorter show, and then we'll put it to bed and be done with it, never to be discussed again unless, God knows, next year Ohio State will dump some more information. But we're going to dive into this topic. It's and after this show, we can move back on into college football, into what's relevant and actually matters in life and matters in sports. So let's dive into it. All right, let's dive right into it. First of all, this is wild. It's wild that this is even a story, that there's questions being asked, but that's sports media for you. They're bored. They got nothing else to talk about. And so they have to talk about it because it's a story to them, even though it's a non-story, it's a non-anything. So let's review what happened. Michael Drake decided that he was going to dump all these text messages and emails onto the public. And he decided to do so the first day of training camp. Let's just evaluate why he would decide to do it on that day. One, hopefully people would be caught up in training camp starting, I guess, to maybe not provide it as much attention. But what's concerning is you have a group of student athletes that are going to training camp, and now you're going to put this mess on them for the second year in a row. You're going to dump this on the players, the kids. Why? Are you that dysfunctional as a leader? It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that of all time, he could have done this mid-July. It's not like they didn't have it prepared. He could have dumped it in mid-July, let people talk about it, kept the players, the kids, the students, athletes, kept them out of it, but he didn't. Why? Because he is that dysfunctional of a leader. So I mentioned on Twitter, this is a formal and public invite, Michael Drake. Come on the show. You can call in. You don't have to come here. God knows you don't want to see me face to face. Or maybe I'll drive down to your office. We'll have a little interview. Because people want to know. People want the hard questions answered. So I'll be there. I'm going to come down to your office. Ring the doorbell. It's time that people got the answers they want. But let's just evaluate what happened. So initially the most shocking report was that I got offered a job at Alabama. People were like, what? This horrible football coach that we all hated and thought sucked at his job got offered by Alabama. Let's make this clear. It doesn't matter if I got offered the job or not. It's not a story. It doesn't matter. For some reason, we're going to make it matter. We're going to talk about it. We're going to ask Nick Saban in an interview. Who cares? If he did offer me the job, would that make him a bad guy? Would that make him wrong? Better yet, I told you he offered me a job a month ago. But now, because Urban texted someone about it, now it's real. So let's just evaluate which story is most likely. Either I made up an Alabama offer, just made it up, trying to get a raise, right? Seeking raises. I made up the Alabama offer. I jeopardized my career at Ohio State with this fake offer. Because if Urban found out I didn't get offered the job, he would have been irate. Never mind that. What if he told me to take it and I didn't have a job offer? I'd have been out of a job. So either I made it up to get a raise. I was making $300,000 a year. Certainly was dying for a raise. Either I made it up or Nick Saban wanted to steer clear of the mess that the media has been stirring for 12 months. I'm sure also Urban Meyer was so inexperienced in managing assistants and in dealing with job offers that he would have had no idea if I got offered a job at Alabama, right? How would he have known? This is his first rodeo, right? But anyways, here's reality. Not only in this situation, but with a normal job offer, Nick Saban did a background check, as he said. And the background check involved a recruiting assistant he had there brought up some concerns because we had a history together. And because of that, he made some phone calls, one of which was to Tom Herman. Those phone calls all came back very positive. Good coach. You should hire him. So yeah, he had concerns, took 24 hours, called me back and said, you know what? We're going to move forward with this. We're going to make an offer. I said, I appreciate it, coach. Let me talk to Urban. Called Urban, let him know, told him I really wanted to think about it. I brought up my concerns that he might retire soon. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20. He did. I brought up concerns that that I needed to get out from underneath his umbrella. I was an Urban Meyer guy, that Earl Bruce's grandson, the only reason I got hired. I also brought up the fact that I would be the only human being on earth that worked for Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. And that's a hell of a valuable resume builder. But either way, it doesn't matter. Now, I will tell you this, that there was a lot of reservation of going to Alabama. One, landslide. Everyone I knew in the industry, coaches at Clemson, Georgia, Florida, Florida State, Penn State, coaches all across the country that knew that I was thinking about doing this, to a man, all said, God, if you think working for Urban's bad, you have no idea. Don't do it. It's miserable. Nick Saban makes life miserable. I also had another reservation. I don't know if people really realize this, but Nick Saban worked for my grandfather. So back in, I think it was, let's see, 79, my grandfather got hired. Pete Carroll was his DB coach. Came from Iowa State to Ohio State. Pete Carroll left. My grandfather hired Nick Saban. So Nick Saban works for my grandfather. So they have some issues, and I think it was 82-ish, and my grandfather fires the defensive coordinator. His name's Denny Frizzell. Fires him. Had to make a change. He knew he had to make a change. Didn't like firing people, so he fires him. The next day, Nick Saban, in a staff meeting, popped off. Made a bunch of comments that you don't make. And so my grandfather was faced with a decision. And as my grandfather told me, the last thing in the world I wanted to do was fire Nick Saban. He's one of the best coaches I've ever had. I didn't want to fire him. But he left me no choice. Because it came down to loyalty. So he fired him. He said, I had to fire him and I hated it. I didn't want to. But I did what anyone should do. I fired him. So that was my biggest concern, is I'm going down to potentially work for a guy that my grandfather fired. It's not like we had great family ties. It's going to be the opposite narrative of working for Urban Meyer, right? You can't say, oh, so he just got the job because of his grandfather. No. That would be the opposite of the reality. And I actually met with Coach Saban and asked him about it. I said, Coach, I have one concern. I know there's a history with my grandfather. I just want to see where you're at with that. And his response told me more about him as a leader, as a coach, and as a person than anything else that I've heard about him. He said, you know what? I was young. I was loyal to our coordinator and made comments that in hindsight, sitting where I sit now, should have gotten me fired. If anyone that has worked for me or works for me now said the things I said, I would fire them on the spot. And I sat back. I said, wow. I mean, that's makes me feel better. And then I talked to Mike Loxley, the offensive coordinator, prior to meeting with Saban, prior to going down there. And I brought it up. I said, bro, are you serious? Like, I don't know if you know, but my grandfather fired him. He said, yeah, I talked to him about it. I told him this, Coach Saban, either Zach's an excellent coach and you're really happy you hired him and everything's great, or you get to fire him and get a little personal vindication. I said, man, what? That doesn't make me feel any better. So that was what I was dealing with. But the reality is, none of this matters. It didn't matter then. It doesn't matter now. It won't ever matter. I don't know why it's even a public story. But at this point in my life, I can't stand narratives. I can't stand people that are too spineless to be truthful, courageous, and honest. Currently in this story, that is Nick Saban. If he wants to be honest, the honest fact was he did hear concerns. There were concerns. People brought them up. He addressed them, investigated them, vetted them, and decided to move forward and offer me a job. Again, not that it matters, but the moral story is he could have been truthful when asked. Yeah, we discussed it. There were some concerns. I vetted him and we wanted to move forward. And then he pulled out because he wanted to stay home, which I did. I had kids in Columbus. I didn't want to leave. Anyways, that was Nick Saban now. A year ago, that was Urban Meyer and Gene Smith that lacked the courage to be honest. It was. It happens constantly. It isn't a knock on them. It really is a knock on the media, on public mobs, on outrageous societal attention to non-stories. On a side note for coaches, better yet, anyone with a work phone, get a personal phone. Don't text your wife, mom, friends, girlfriend, kids, anyone from your work phone. I mean, I don't know why I would even have to say that. But furthermore, let me teach you a valuable phrase that when shit hits the fan and someone asks for your work phone, listen clearly, say this: man, I can't find that damn thing anywhere. I lost it. It's not that hard. Why does anyone have any right to dive into your personal text messages? I mean, there's texts between Urban and Shelley Meyer that are now blasted across the country. And not that there's anything horrendous in there, but why does anyone have the right to see that? It's ridiculous. All right, so I want to dive into the dump. That's what I'm calling it, the dump, because there's a big steaming pile of shit out of Michael Drake's ass onto the public and really onto his student athletes. So Michael Drake's dump. Let's just go through it and talk about a couple funny things, and then we'll get through some real issues. First, I thought was hilarious. It was July 20th. Urban texted a recruit after the initial reports broke about me. He said, "Yes, they are divorced and don't get along sometimes. It will be fine. Hindsight is 2020." And bullshit. They are divorced and don't get along sometimes. That's what we're going with, huh? I thought that was hilarious. Also, on March 14th, and this goes to show you the politics of college football. So Greg Schiano was Urban's like little right-hand man, right? His little guy. He was his little buddy. And they consulted each other a lot. And you look at what happened last fall, and it's like, man, probably should have less buddies and more assistants, huh? Because that was an abomination, that defense. And probably should keep everyone on the same platform as an assistant base goes. But anyways, Schiano texted Urban, this one really pissed me off, about the difference going into this fall. And he texted Urban about getting me, Tony Alford, and Bill Davis to buy into special teams. Huh. I wish I could go back in time and just interject in that conversation like, hey, Greg, how about you, here's how we'll be successful this fall. Get your defense right. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about Tony. Don't worry about Bill. Get your defense right. If you get your defense right, there's a chance Ohio State makes the playoffs. Hilarious. But that just goes to show you how any football program works. You get these head coaches, they get their guys. And I've been there. Urban was funny because for a month you'd be his guy. And then the next month you'd be like almost fired. And then the next month you'd be his guy again. It was hilarious. But it's just funny. And then I also saw in the text messages the conversations that Urban had after firing me. So that was what's funny is I obviously was privy to all of this and didn't know what I wasn't privy to was anything after I got fired. But just look at the timeline, right? So here's what happened. So all this news broke. The media starts running with it. Urban Meyer calls me in the morning. It was a Monday morning, July 23rd. Calls me and says, "Oh man, well, we're in it now." I said, "Yeah, we are. I know, coach. I'm sorry. I didn't want to bring this on you." He said, "It'll be all right. We just got to get through the storm. Just fight through it. We know what's real." I said, "Yeah, we do." So we moved on. That was the end of it. He was going to have to deal with this nightmare at Big Ten Media Days. I felt terrible, but we were going to get through it. So then I'm freaking out. I can't believe that this is going on. I can't believe that a human being would do this to another. I go for a walk. I'm walking campus. I can't even sit in the office. Can't be in the office. Gene Smith rolls up. I don't know how he found me, how he knew I was there, but he rolls up and we start talking. He says, "Man, we are in some shit, aren't we?" I said, yeah, we are. And he was like, "Don't worry. We got your back like we always have. We know what's real." That's the narrative here. The real narrative, the reality, the truth is we know what's real. Now, no one has the spine or courage to say it, but the underlying theme is we know what's real. So just look at it. What happens? So at about 1:47 p.m. on that day, Gene is texting with Urban talking about we're going to have Zach go through this program to deal with his psycho ex-wife, and it's a management plan. Like there's all these things that they're going to put in place and do so that we can just get through the storm, get out the other end of this thing, because this is nonsense. We know it because we're on the inside. You don't know it because you were on the outside.
So, I mean, we're talking about a full day's worth of communication between Urban, Gene Smith, Brian Voltolini, Andy Thomas, who runs the James Cancer, the Ohio State Medical Center. All these people are talking about what we can do to just put things in place and move forward, because all of them know what is real. And then someone, I'd imagine it's Michael Drake. I don't know that. And that's not where any animosity comes from. I'd imagine it was him, though, decides that, nope, we don't care what you have to say or what you're going to do. It's over. It's done. So I get a phone call. We had a workout. I go through the workout with my players. I'm putting them through workout, do some drills, get off the field. I get a phone call from Brian Voltolini. He says, hey, Greg wants to meet with you. Now, Urban's at Big Ten Media Days, and so I go to meet with Greg Schiano, and I already know this is not good. So I go in there. Schiano puts his phone on speakerphone and sets it down, and I'm on a conference call, I guess you'd call it, with Gene Smith and Urban Meyer. I want to preface this and say, I've known Urban Meyer since I was 3 years old. I get it. People think that that is some like blinder reason why he hired me or kept me on staff, which isn't reality, but I don't care. You can think I was a shitty coach. Have fun. I don't really give a shit. But I've known him since I was 3 years old. The last thing he ever said to me was, Zach, I want to let you know we're making a change. You need to clean your office out tonight. And I was speechless. Like I had a feeling that he might have to do that, and that, you know, kudos to him for making a move he felt he had to make. But now we're a year later. I've never heard a word from Urban Meyer. Now, you go through the texts, it's hilarious. At 11:35 a.m., Shelly was texting Urban about how I was going to be fired. 11:35 a.m. I didn't get fired till like 7:30 p.m. And Shelly said, I worry because he drinks a lot and has anger issues. And then she said, text Mickey, not Lynn. What kind of self-righteous shit is that? First of all, Shelly, you don't have any idea if I drink, when I drink, how I drink. Second of all, you have no idea if I have anger issues. But I'm glad. We appreciate your input. Thank you. And text Mickey. Text her now. Outrageous. But you know what? At 10 p.m. it was announced I was released. And then Urban's text to recruits and people after are hilarious. Amazingly, all the stuff versus Zach will get legally dropped and he was fired, Meyer said in a text. Tough perception world we live in. He was fired for cumulative stuff. I will not tell media. No, 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 Herb. I was fired because you succumbed to the pressure of media and administrators. There was no reason to fire me at that point. I've said it 100 times. You could have fired me in 2015. It would have been righteous. Would have been justified. I can't wait to go through this process and hear, why was I fired when I was fired? Ah, yes, he was trying to get rid of me, right? Bad decision to hire me. That's what he said, right? Bad decision. Bad decision. Well, wait a minute now. On June 4th in 2018, a mere month and a half before I got fired, you can see it in all the texts, he put me in charge of the entire freshman class to make sure that they had a great transition from high school to college. Certainly, I was a degenerate coach, right? He put me in charge of an entire class, June 4th, 2018, right there. Boom, I see it. In charge of the freshman class? A guy he was trying to push out? A guy he was trying to get rid of? I don't think so. But like I said, after the firing, communications is where it's hilarious to read, because I wasn't privy to any of it. Like he sent the text, send to staff, all. I made a decision to release Zach from staff. Core value violation and cumulative issue. Win the moment. Most important thing is team and players at this time, Meyer said in a text to a redacted recipient. Zero conversation about Zach's past issues. We need to help him as he moves forward. Team and players, thanks. We'll discuss plan when I return Wednesday. Need to help him as he move forward. So just out of curiosity, how was that help? Because I was fired without cause. And here's what Ohio State did. Here's Ohio State. Classy, classy, classy move. I was fired. I signed a contract 6 months earlier. Gene Smith never signed it. One of the other assistants had an issue with a clause in there, so they were rewriting it, reworking on it. So essentially, they fired me, and Gene told me, man to man, we're going to honor your contract. We're going to pay you through the end of your contract because we don't want to just throw you out and hurt your kids like that. So we're going to pay your contract. Never happened. Real classy move. So how are you going to help me? Regardless. Why? Here's what text. Everyone's talking about me in Alabama. No one cares about that. Why is no one talking about this text? Trace Armstrong. Tracy Trace, who is Tom Hervin's agent, Urban's agent. He's a big time agent. I think he since has dropped Urban because of this whole mess. He didn't want any part of it. He texted Urban and said, we're going to send these two girls. I don't know who they are. Two people to your house. They're going to need about 4 hours with your phone and some time with you and Shelly. What? What are they going to do with his phone for 4 hours? What did Trace Armstrong want Urban's phone for 4 hours for? So interesting. And the best part, so irrelevant. We're talking about it because it's a story, I guess. But this is just mind-blowing that this is news, that this is still a story, that this is even a headline.
All right, anyways, I'm done with that rant. I just it's something that popped into media and everyone wanted to talk about, and I'm just glad to be done talking about it. but I did want to talk about my visit to Tuscaloosa, because Tuscaloosa is a really different place, really cool place. I really enjoyed it. It was cool because I went down there, and I already mentioned it, but it was kind of a mutual kind of, I went down to meet the staff, meet Saban, see Alabama for what it is so I can make a decision. And also they brought me down so they can make a final decision. I mean, it was one of those things where it was almost like a mutual meet and greet. So I went down there and I really got to get a decent feel for it. I got to tour the facilities, which were really, really nice. That now, at the time, I would have put them ahead of Ohio State. Now with the new Ohio State renovations, it's probably neck and neck. Ohio State might be slightly better just because they're slightly newer. But anyways, one of the cool things that I've never experienced that Saban is big on and did was he did a kind of like a speed dating thing, which is where you went and spent 3 to 4 minutes with each assistant coach. And so I went around and met every coach and sat and talked to them, just bullshitted for 3-4 minutes, I think, so I could feel out the staff and so that the staff could feel out me. And it was really different. I've never heard of that. And it was cool that he did that. And I guess he did that with all, I guess, potential hires or new hires. And then went in and just dove in the staff room with the offensive staff and talked football. Talked about scheme, different plays, play calling, game planning. They were really just getting into what they got away from with Jalen Hurts and into what they did with Tua. And so they were looking at what we did with JT Barrett, and we were talking about what they did with Jalen Hurts and some of the run QB run game stuff, and then some of the run pass option stuff. It was really, really awesome conversation with some high-level coaches. So we talked about that. We talked about play calling, game planning, what I did in my career, what my beliefs were. Really just talked about kind of who I was as a coach and my identity, and then how it fit with their identity. And then really dove into, I think, what Saban was most interested in was the wide receiver technique. I mean, he had me sit there and go through all my drill tapes, every drill I did, really tell him why everything was the way it was. Like, why is that shoot right there? Why is that cone right there? What does that pop-up dummy do? It distracts the receiver's eyes. And you go through all these fundamentals, and I'm sitting there explaining to him why I do what I do. And it was really different, really cool. And he's obviously was playing devil's advocate quite a bit because he's a secondary guy. So we went through that. And then after that, just kind of he left and we kept talking football with the offensive coaches. And then I went and met with Nick Saban, which I talked about kind of that conversation. But we also had some conversation about Kendall Sheffield, which was mutual ground because he was played at Alabama, transferred, went to JUCO, came to Ohio State, obviously played for us. And we talked about him. And I brought up the fact that Kendall Sheffield was like a sniper. Like my guys would catch the ball, tuck it, and the minute it was about to be tucked, he'd punch it out. It was unbelievable. And Saban talked about how he got it. It was all a turnover circuit they did before every practice, I think 10 stations he got from Belichick, and they just would rattle through each turnover station or each turnover drill. And I noticed the difference in Kendall Sheffield, different from our guys. And that was really cool. And then we kind of went out and saw the meeting rooms, saw kind of all the locker rooms. I ran into Jerry Jeudy, who I recruited really hard. And I've already mentioned it. I think he'll be the best receiver in the country this year. It's just my opinion. Then we went out to eat. And when we went out to eat, we went to get dinner at some place right by the stadium in the main strip there in Tuscaloosa. And I ran into Pat Surtain Sr., who, if you don't know who he is, his son now plays at Alabama. He was a great NFL player, the head coach at American Heritage High School in Fort Lauderdale. And it was funny because it was really us in Alabama were recruiting him the hardest. It was those two and LSU were in knee deep with him. And I'm sitting here interviewing, and I'm the one recruiting him. And so I'm down, you know, meeting with Alabama, and in walks Pat Surtain Sr. And I was like, oh, shit. He goes, oh, man. We probably shouldn't tell anyone we saw each other here, huh? it was fun. He's a great dude. And one of the most admirable things that I've seen, because a lot of guys, high school coaches, end up getting college jobs, the really good ones. And then there are some that get them because they were with, maybe they had a great player and colleges really want that player. And so they sign him. And I actually brought Pat up for our corner's job when Kerry left, because I think he'll be a phenomenal college coach. I mean, shoot, he played in the NFL forever. He's a really well-respected guy and a really good football coach. So I brought him up and mentioned it, and he actually ended up pulling out because Alabama was looking at him. We were looking at him, and he pulled out and did something really honorable, which I think is what a great father does, is he called me and said, hey, listen, I appreciate it, man. I really do, maybe in a couple years, but I just don't want me going to college to have anything to do with my son or influence my son or have any issues with my son. And everything was about his son. And I thought that was awesome. I mean, really cool. Cause that's a rarity. And who knows if he gets a chance to jump again. I mean, you're talking about Alabama, Ohio State. It's hard to turn those down, but, yeah, he did it. And then, we went to dinner, hanging out, kind of just, eating, just talking, getting to know each other. And then, actually got to meet Tua. Tua came in to see Mike Locksley. I got to meet him. He seemed like an awesome kid, just young, energetic. He just came off playing in the national championship. So it was really, he was high on life. And then I talked to the offensive coaches about when they pulled Jalen Hurts and how hard that was. I mean, you think about that decision, and I've mentioned it before on the show. That decision is one of the most epic decisions, I think, in college sports. Like, you're talking about at halftime of the national championship game, you pull your Heisman Trophy quarterback and you put in a true freshman. Wild, wild to do that. And, but I mean, kudos to them. They got a ring because of it. And that obviously paved the landscape for this fall. Now you got Tua coming back at Alabama. Now Jalen Hurts is going to take over at Oklahoma. It's going to be really cool to see those two careers and see how they pan out. I know everyone's high on Tua, and also excited to see Jalen get back in action, because he came in last year and really provided a spark to Alabama. Then after that, one of the wilder things, we ended up going to, I guess you called it a cigar shop, but it essentially was a house. It was this guy's house who had a ton of cigars, and he sold them. It was a business, but it was like a house, and it was supposed to be closed for business, cause I think it was a Sunday, and Alabama, I can't remember the laws, but something after 8 PM, you can't serve alcohol or anything. So we went over there, a bunch of coaches and myself, and smoked cigars, drank some tequila, hung out, got really, really, that's when you start to get to know people on a deeper level. And so we did that, and it was kind of bizarre because it was like this guy in a like dirty t-shirt and some gym shorts sitting on his couch, and he's sitting there selling us cigars and pouring us tequila. It was really weird. But overall, I'd say it was a great trip. It was really cool to see Tuscaloosa, see Alabama, see everything about the place, really get to look inside and under the hood of another, probably the other premier college football program at that time. This is other than maybe a Clemson in there. But it was really, really good. Very different from Columbus. It was definitely very college towny-ish, very Alabama cultish. But it was really cool. So I just wanted to kind of talk about that, because that's a different experience that not everyone goes through. And I do also wanted to bring up before I end the show, I apologize, because I put out there that there was going to be a surprise last night. And funny story, it wasn't really that cool of a surprise. I just had a handful of players that I know reach out to me because they had move-in day. And they wanted to wear some of the Menace to Society merchandise that I just got in.
And so they hit me up about it. And I was like, hey, if that's what you want to do, like, they were like, oh man, people will freak out. Like they'll go crazy. It'll be awesome. I was like, yeah, man. I mean, I'll drop you off a shirt or hat or whatever. And obviously I was going to make them pay for it. And so so we did that. And then, people at Ohio State found out and like true, to form Ohio State. I mean, they freaked out. Okay. Quinn Temple's a guy that's an operations guy. Ryan Stamper, a bunch of people grabbed the players and told them they can't do that. And it'd be a bad look because God forbid you support somebody you care about and that's doing something different and trying to rebuild his life. So shout out to Ohio State for that. You really are classy. Really, really courageous of you. But that was my surprise. It ended up not becoming a surprise, so it was a very anticlimactic surprise. But it was going to be really cool, and it would have been really, really funny to see. I would have loved to have seen what Michael Drake did if, like, five of the best players on Ohio State's team roll into the team hotel with a Menace to Society shirt. That would have been hilarious. But I'm glad it ended the way it did. Don't put those kids in a bad spot. They were the ones that wanted to do it, and I warned them of what the perception may be. But it was going to be cool. So, anyways, I appreciate them. They know who they are. I'm certainly not going to call them out. But just wanted to update you because that was kind of a bummer, but it is what it is. All right, well, that's going to wrap up this this episode, this unique episode. Thank God we don't have to do another one of these. Hopefully, we don't have to discuss this ever again. But anyways, thanks for joining us. Just wanted to update you. The storefront on our website should be launching in the next day. And I keep saying that, but man, who knew it would be this difficult to launch a storefront? Certainly not me. I'm a football coach. No idea how that works. But the storefront will be launching in the next day. We got some really cool t-shirts that just got shipped out to our Patreon subscribers. That will be for sale. The hats are unbelievable. So cool. Those are already in. Zone 6 apparel is on its way here. So we'll put it up for sale as soon as the storefront launches. And then also the Trash Talk line. I know people have been messaging me nonstop about the Tom Herman shirts, the Brett McMurphy shirts. Those are all coming and will be available. Also, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or really however you listen to your podcasts. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. We're on all those. Or as simple as go to menacetosocietypodcast.com. That's a way to listen, a way to make sure. Also, sign up for our mailing list. We sent out an initial email. I know people have joined the mailing list, but we're going to really crank that up here in the next week or two because we want to keep you informed on what's going on here outside of just the show. And again, I'll reiterate the platform for advertising and sponsorship. If you're interested, please hit us up. Sponsorship at menacetosocietypodcast.com. Again, I know this is a little different, a little off the grid and off of our norm. So I appreciate you listening. I had to get it out of my system, had to rant a little, give you a little perspective from my side. And I want to reiterate that this is a non-story. Should have never been a story, should have never had this episode. But Ohio State decided to dump it all. The media decided to run with it. So here we are. But glad it's over. Really excited to get back into college football content next or later this week. And excited to get back to the norm. So like we always say, hope you were entertained. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked what you heard. And if you didn't like it, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Menace to society.